Rachel goes into Singapore with an excitement and anticipation that this thing that everybody in America said she was would make her feel like home. And then she gets there and she experiences a lot of bullying and antagonism, and I think it actually steals her spine to be proud that she's from both.
That was Constance Wu, the star of Crazy Rich Asians.
Much better movie than you think it is.
And Bill McCuddy and Bill Bregoli.
Yeah.
And myself, Neil Rosen, we're going to talk about Crazy Rich Asians today. We're also going to talk about The Wife, the new movie with Glenn Close. We're going to talk about the Meg Shark movie. And we're going to talk about, oh, so much to talk about. We're going to talk about the miseducation of Cameron Post. And we're going to talk about, I previewed the first three episodes of the new season of Ozark. And last but not least, we're going to talk about this new Academy rule, which is best popular movie, which the Academy is a bunch of dinosaurs. They make changes once every like 15 years, and they actually are making a change, and we're going to talk about that too. And we'll talk about that.
Also, if you have any desire to know anything about the best movies of summer, apparently we did that on a television show.
That's right. We have a television show on CUNY TV, Channel 75 if you have Spectrum, and Channel 30 if you have Fios. And you could also watch the show online.
If you have Fios, there's a drug for that. So you can just see your doctor.
You could
ask
see
your
it,
doctor about Fios.
You could see it on CUNY.TV and just click on a show called Arts in the City. Arts in the City. And Bill Bregoli, Lisa Rossman, and myself do, or it's called Talking
No,
Movies.
I don't.
It's like
Bill McCuddy.
Bill McCuddy.
What did I say?
You said Bill Bregoli. I don't want me on college
I could dream, can't
You've been
I?
Drinking tonight, haven't you?
I can dream. I could dream.
Yeah, we'd love to have you, Bill.
We do the best summer-themed movies. Not movies that came out in the summer, like, you know, like The Endless Summer and Summer of 42 and Walk on the Moon and all these great movies that are set in the summer and Meatballs. And give me another movie we talked about on that show, Bill. You
did. And we timed it to be at the absolute
last
end
summer
of summer.
Last Summer in the Hamptons you did?
Last Summer in the Hamptons. Jim Jarmusch movie.
Jarmusch. No, it's actually a Henry Jekyll movie. And since you picked it, I find it very interesting that you didn't know the director of the movie.
Yeah.
But okay. But nonetheless.
I love it the one time in 3 years of doing this podcast, you actually caught me in a mistake. Okay, so.
Yeah, the first time. So anyway, last but not least, so check that out on CUNY.TV on the web or on television. And a web extra, which is about 27 minutes, I'm going to be posting soon, and I'll send links out at Neil Rosen Apples. Crazy Rich Asians. Okay, so my wife read the book and told me a little bit about it, and I went to see the movie, and she was telling me how great the book was. And I don't know, maybe, and Bill Bregoli, Bill McCuddy, he said it was terrific. He really set the bar high on this thing. He went before I said, this, you're going to love it. So maybe, you know, my expectations were too high because I thought it was all right, but I didn't love the movie.
I was drunk on sake when I saw it.
So here's what this is about. Constance Wu and falls in love with this guy in the United States. What city are they in? I believe it's
New York.
Yeah. And he
Chinatown?
Says, listen, there's a wedding in Shanghai with my family where I'm from originally. Why don't we go and go?
And she doesn't know, has no idea what her family does or is or anything.
Right. So why don't we go to the wedding? And she's like, you'll meet my family. And she's like, okay. They've been dating for.
She falls in love with Donald Trump Jr.
So, they get on the plane and they're in this like, forget about first class. It's like first class plus, plus, plus.
They're sitting in the captain's lap.
You know, it's like this, they have like a suite in the plane. And she's
it's
like,
two stories. I've never seen two stories in a movie where they show the first class and they had a loft in first
you
class.
You know, when I was a kid,
you're looking at me like, is he telling the truth?
When I was a kid and I went the 747s and I went to Europe like 1970, 71, the upstairs, which
unfortunately he found his way home because his parents were just trying to send him over there.
On the 747s back then, when air travel was more of a luxury thing, it was a lounge up there. There was a bar and couches and stuff.
Those are seats now, Neil. They sell
those
seats.
I know, but I'm saying, so this is a throwback to that, where the upstairs is...
well, kind of. Anyway, they get over...
So anyway, they get over there. He's wealthier.
And where's over there?
They get to Shanghai and
Singapore.
Singapore, thank you. And which is beautiful. That's one of the things I really liked about the movie was
real estate porn.
Just don't go to the jail in Singapore. Don't throw anything in the ground. Don't get caught dealing drugs.
City.
You should see the Anthony Bourdain episode about Singapore.
So they go.
They kind of gloss over all that in this movie.
Yeah,
and he's like the richest guy in Singapore, and the family is unbelievably wealthy. And it's really an old story. It's like, you know, she's from the wrong side of the tracks. She's not part of the. She doesn't have the. The background.
It's a Jane Austen novel with Chinese people.
Yeah, she doesn't have. What's the word I'm looking for, Brugola? She doesn't have the credential, the family, the upstanding
the breasts.
Family.
She doesn't
background.
Have the breasts.
The upstanding family background to
sorry,
marriage,
Constance.
Joining their family or being with their family. So the mother, who's played by
Michelle Yeoh,
right,
Bond girl,
right, former Bond girl, is. Really bitchy to the girl. I mean, she wants her out of here, you know? And then all the girl friends that the guy knew when he was growing up there in Singapore.
Well, he was the catch. He was the guy that got away.
Trying to sabotage her and their relationship. And, you know, I've seen this movie like 100 times.
Yeah, but you've never seen it like this.
The difference is it's cast with Asians and it's set in Singapore, which is beautiful and all more power to, you know, more Asian cast movies. Great. But from a story point of view, I mean, I didn't think there was any. Look, I didn't hate the movie. I just thought it was okay. I've just seen this movie done before.
I can tell we're going to have a fight about this. So let me just start with one simple thing I think you'll agree with. It's a notch or a notch and a half above most dopey romantic comedies, having nothing to do with the Asian thing. It's sweet. It's got a like kind of a nice message. It's like
cast really well.
It's cast and shot beautifully. But now I'm starting to talk about things that you could say about any good movie.
The guy from The Daily Show is in it. He's getting his own.
Well, and the guy from The Hangover's in it.
Yeah, Ken Jeong.
Ken Jeong.
Right. He has one of the funnier.
Who they kind of suppress, right. Which I thought was kind of cool. I thought it's like, oh, you could do stunt casting with him and make him like crazy like it was in The Hangover, but they kind of push him down a little. They mute him a little. And I thought, oh, that's cool because it would be easy to make him like the reason Americans should go see this movie.
There's a bunch of subplots in this that are not fully fleshed out, and I could give a shit about them, really. There's one about, you know, a couple.
Do you want to go to Singapore after seeing the movie?
Yeah, that I would like to do.
Thank
it's
you.
Beautiful. But I will tell you that one of the subplots, which is not fully developed, you know, involves some guy that's having, you know, cheating on his wife, and she's rich, and he wasn't, and he feels, kind of like suppressed in their marriage because she's the one that.
But even that isn't horrible.
At least they tried to do too much rather than too little. You know.
Yeah, I mean,
you know who I liked? There was a girl in the movie who played like Constant Wu's like best friend over there.
Aquafina,
and she
girl with short hair.
Yeah,
that's Aquafina. She was in Ocean's 8.
Yeah, she was actually very charismatic and funny in the movie.
The gay guy is funny, and actually the gay guy is sort of the guy who wrote it. He wrote the whole thing, right?
Wow.
So anyway, keep going.
Dumping
on the Asian people,
right,
Neil.
So before you start raving about this thing, I would like Bill Bregoli to chime in on his opinion on Crazy Rich Asians.
You know, there are several jokes that I didn't get because I'm not Asian or rich.
But you are crazy.
But I did appreciate the fact that not all the jokes worked for a white audience, and that's okay. That's going to make the Asian audience like it. I think Ken Jeong had one of the better, sharper jokes. Remember, he's at home with his family, and the kids aren't eating their meal, and he says, eat all that. There are starving kids in America.
There's
sharper jokes in there than you usually get in most rom-coms. And there's even an ode to The Godfather.
I didn't catch that.
Dead fish in the bed?
Oh, I didn't even make the Godfather, because I guess it was a horse in The Godfather. I didn't even really make the correlation on that. But
no, sleeps with the fishes. Anyway, we'll try and catch Neil up with everything.
Luca Brasi
the point is,
the fishes,
this is way above average. Maybe I fell for it because they served me nice Chinese food at the end, and I went to a nice
screening
for it.
No, I want to know.
And I met some of the cast.
Forget about that shit. What was it that you loved about this? You came out of this thing and thought it was great. You were almost going to see it.
I was charmed.
You were going to see it. Mike Sargent and I did the...
I said I would go again.
You
I know,
said
I know.
Go
and
again,
you're
so
stunned by that. I would see it again.
Why?
Well, maybe I thought maybe I was concerned that I knew you were going to hate it, and I wanted to like see it again and see maybe if you have a point.
You tell me.
But as usual, you don't have a point. So here's the thing: it's charming. It does represent a group of people we never get to see anything about. But even if you take that out of it, because you should, it should just be a good movie on its own. It is a good movie on its own.
It's okay. It's not. I don't hate the movie. I'd say on my Big Apple rating scale, out of a possible four, which I rarely do on this podcast, I'd give it 2.5 apples.
You'd give it 3.5.
You'd give it. You'd give.
Yeah,
it, how many
I'd
give it?
I'd go 3.5 as well.
You'd go 3.5.
Yeah, here's the thing, Neil. The thing you're ignoring is the romantic comedy format has been so done to death that when anything decent comes along that raises the bar or is even a half of the bar better, I give it a pass. I give it like I really enjoy the fact that something I've seen so many times before is this much better. And I think it is this much better. Instead of I get what you're saying. You've seen it before, blah, 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 but you haven't seen it like this.
I don't hate the movie. I didn't want to walk out.
I think the cast
bored.
Is charming.
It was like,
I think all the... here's a really good barometer for any movie, I think. All the lesser characters are written really well, too. I mean, Michelle Yeoh is the mother.
Yeah. She gives a very good performance, yeah, I'll say that. All right, maybe it's 2.75.
Okay, we've got another quarter of an apple out of him. I think that it's better than you're saying it is because it's showing us. Well, first of all, when you go, as soon as the credits roll, I wanted to buy a ticket to Singapore.
Well, that's the thing.
But that shouldn't make it a great movie.
I've never seen Singapore depicted on film, certainly in this extensively. And I said, man, this is a beautiful city. And there's a line in the movie where apparently this unbelievably wealthy family says, you know, we came to Singapore, you know, our family's roots, we came to Singapore like, you know, in the late 1800s, early 1900s, when there was nothing here but just like pigs and farms and it's nothing. So, you know, this is, relatively, it's not an old European city. I mean, they've been, it's a relatively, everything looked very modern in the city. I mean,
it is.
Beautiful. Yeah. They had fountains. They kept showing the same building. Over and over again.
With the giant surfboard on the
top?
Yeah,
with the surfboard. There's
and
a
you
three
know
towers
it's, you know
surfboard.
At some point it's going to have something to do in the movie, and it finally does. And I'm told actually that's a hotel. So I went to a screening with some of the stars of the movie, and they're just thrilled that they're being represented. And so I'm not grading it just on that. It has to be a good movie outside of that. But let's be honest. You haven't seen this kind of a movie about this. It's kind of like
I give the movie credit for two things: bringing Singapore, showing off Singapore on screen. And there aren't many movies that focus on Asians, and that's great. You know, I think that, you know, there's a segment that is really underserved by Hollywood, and I think that's terrific.
Take the Asians out of the equation,
and it's just an okay story.
It just as
but
a
you
movie,
can't really take them out of the equation.
As in a movie, you don't like it. Two and three quarters.
It's almost three apples. 2.75 apples isn't bad.
Getting them up there.
It's not bad. It's not bad. It's
well,
okay.
Constance
it's,
Wu is really thrilled now that you're up to 2.75
it's
stars.
Okay. I mean, you know, I didn't really, I didn't find myself really, you know, I tell you, at the end, I you know, got
you were
me
crying.
A little at the
Did
end.
You cried at
no,
the
I
end,
didn't
I heard.
I cried at the end, but it got me a little at the end. And, you know, in the middle of the thing, you know, I was kind of like, I thought it kind of lagged a bit in the middle there, you know, when she goes to a bridal party and he's having a bachelor party. I'm like, you know, he's attending somebody's bachelor, you know, they go to somebody's wedding.
Oh, yeah, no, right?
So he attends the group.
We all saw the movie, Neil.
Yeah, I'm telling the audience. So, you know, it was a little laggy at that particular point, but it's also kind of hard to accept the fact that this is the book, that they would have this intense relationship. And she has no idea that the guy is worth, like, he's like the prince of Singapore, you know what I mean?
But that's kind of the reason he went to New York. He was, like, wanting to be taken seriously on his own.
Right.
And then he finds this girl, and he takes her in the three-story first-class plane trip.
You know
trip.
What we should move on to next?
I'm going to move
on. The thematic movie we should do next. You guys haven't seen it, but I've seen it, and it actually works in. And I saw it the day after I saw Crazy Rich Asians, was The Meg, which is made with an enormous amount of crazy rich Asian money.
Is it really?
It's Chinese financed, and you can tell by looking at the movie One of the Stars, and it's Jason Statham trying to kill a giant shark. I don't have to go into the plot a whole lot, but his co-star is Li Bingbing. She is one of the biggest stars in Asia, and she's the reason she was put in the money is put in the movie was Chinese money. We want our
sense.
Star.
That
so
makes
she's
sense.
Put in it. She has sort of a romantic relationship. He actually bounces off the young Asian girl who plays her daughter in the movie. He does better with her.
How's
the
movie?
It's not as bad as I had hoped, because I was hoping it was going to be so bad that you could make fun of it.
So is it like Jaws-like, or is it more like Snakes on a Plane, or that one where Samuel L. Jackson,
snakes,
when the
snakes
shark
on the
comes
plane,
out of the tank?
And you could kind of make fun of, because that didn't really work, and they had an outlandish concept. This
Deep
is just
Blue
a
sea
bigger shark than you've
thinking.
Ever seen, but the shark is not all that interesting. He's just really big.
I actually heard that some of those special effects are not that great.
Yeah.
But I think the most interesting thing you said is that in the future of movies, because the Chinese market is opening up incredibly, and also they put up some of the dough here, is we're going to start to meet some Chinese actors. Because, let's be honest, and I've said this before, last year we were 25 or 30% of the world market, and everything else is the other 70%, and they want to see some of their stars in these movies. So this may be groundbreaking from the standpoint
you're
that
saying the United States box office contributes to 25%
of international
gross?
of the rest
of the world.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
so
when the shark attacks,
so get used to this, guys. We're going to start seeing a lot of Chinese people in American movies.
You see a lot of Chinese people in this movie, not just Li Bingbing.
Shark attacks the beach.
A shark attacks a beach full of swimmers, and it's a beach in China.
And
it's
he
in
doesn't
the
eat the Chinese people. He only eats the American people.
He eats
people?
Some of them, but you don't really see any chewing or blood. There's a little fat Chinese boy that you're like, ooh, is the shark going to eat the fat
know,
boy
he,
who
you
can't
know
swim?
He's going
and of
down.
Course he doesn't.
You know that
there's
little
a dog
pork,
in the water.
That
he
little
doesn't
pork
eat
dumpling
the dog.
Is going
don't worry,
down.
He doesn't eat the dog. But it was just
so
it was
like,
just
it's
so
Jaws so. Like he's attacking the swimmers who are like 10, 20, 30 feet off.
Right, the swimming, and there are a billion swimmers on this beach, and there are a lot of underwater shots because everybody's seen Shark Week, and we all know that if you make a lot of motion under the water, the shark's going to go to you thinking you're a seal and attack you.
How does it compare to that Blake Lively shark movie that we saw?
Well, I haven't got Blake Lively,
what?
But I still got a shark.
You remember she stuck
yeah,
on
no,
the rock?
Yeah, no, I actually saw that movie again last week. It was on a monitor where I was working.
I saw it. I interviewed Blake Lively for that one.
You interviewed the shark, though.
Yeah, so how does it compare to that one?
Well, this has got more people. It's a different movie.
Okay, is
it's
it
a
funny?
Different kind of movie.
Is it campy, like
it tries to be funny.
It
tries to be funny, but it really isn't. It's just so-so. But
okay. Bill saw The Wife.
Okay.
With Glenn Close. Why don't you tell us about that, Bill McCuddy?
So what's interesting about The Wife, at least on paper, is that Jonathan Pryce is a world-renowned and now in the beginning of the movie, Nobel Prize-winning author. What we know from frame one in the movie is
she wrote all the books.
He's had a lot of help from his wife.
You get that from the trailer.
The wife.
Yeah.
And she's like she's on a low simmer. She's like, she listens to everybody like applaud. She goes to Oslo. Is that where they go when you win the Nobel Prize? I think.
Yeah. Yes.
She goes over. She's the doting wife. He's getting all the attention. We know from some backstory, including the daughter of Glenn Close, who plays her at a younger age, that he had a lot of help writing this book. And she's just made a decision as the loving wife to let him get all the attention. So as an audience, you're sitting there waiting for her to like just explode. And it happens very, very late in the movie. Let's get to the headlines.
Oscar nomination?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Really?
You know,
August release.
A lot of people don't realize she's been nominated 6 times, I think.
She nominated for Fatal Attraction. She nominated for The Big Chill.
Not for The Big Chill. I think she was nominated for Fatal Attraction. Here's the point.
She had to have been nominated
for Fatal Attraction. She's the Susan Lucci of... I mean, everybody makes a big deal about Meryl Streep being nominated 19 times. Glenn Close has been nominated a bunch of times. Hasn't won. This is all Glenn Close's movie, except it's really stagey. It has a bunch of extra characters. Christian Slater plays a guy who is writing an unflattering novel about an unflattering biography. I'm sorry, about Jonathan Pryce. Keeps trying to corner Glenn and get her to help him.
Wow!
It feels very stagey. I said that. It feels like a stage play.
What was it, a stage play before?
No. It would be, I think, more successful as a stage play.
Glenn Close has been nominated for the following Oscars.
Please, enlighten us.
The World According to Garp for supporting
deserved
actress.
Deserved it.
The Big Chill, supporting actress.
She did.
The Natural.
Okay.
Also supporting role. Lead actress role in Fatal Attraction. Lead actress role in Dangerous Liaisons. And lead actress role in, get this, you'll never guess this one. But what a great performance, Albert Nobbs.
Oh, right, I forgot about that. Right. Yeah.
She played
so transgender. If that movie came out this year, it would be so much more talked about. But anyway.
So you recommend it?
I don't recommend it. It's
too stagey.
Even
for
a Glenn Close fan, and I think she will absolutely be nominated, although it's so easy this early in the season to say, what's going to happen to the Oscars? Everyone jumps to an Oscar prediction this early in the year. But so beloved. And as I said, left in the ditch so many times by past nominations that I don't think she'll win, because I haven't seen anything else. But I can't imagine that this is going to beat something amazing that somebody else is going to do. So she'll be nominated again, but I don't think she'll win, and I don't recommend it.
There you go.
That's my whole story.
Well, I saw the first three episodes of the new season of Ozark. Now, Ozark, I used to say Breaking Bad light. I mean, because nothing's as great as Breaking Bad, but Ozark's
which is a B+.
Damn good. And... you know, it picks up. I won't spoil it. Don't worry. But
well, say who stars in it for people who have no idea what we're talking about.
Okay, so Ozark, if you've never seen it, is a Netflix show, and the first season had 10 episodes, and the new season's coming back, I believe, August 29th. So if you want a great recommendation, binge watch the first season. It's with Jason. Here's what it's about. Jason Bateman and Laura Linney are a married couple. Jason Bateman's this really buttoned-down conservative guy. They live in Chicago. And him and his partner have been money laundering for this guy.
They're CPAs, right?
Who like run the this Colombian cartel. But you know, they have a beautiful office, and you know, he's got two kids, Jason Bateman, and he's just lives an upstanding life. But remind me,
the Bateman didn't, because I've seen it, but just I'm stupid, so people who listen to this know that already. But he didn't in the first episode. He didn't know that they were money laundering, right? His partner knew, but he didn't know, right? And he gets wised up really quickly.
No, he knew that they were money
laundering. He did?
What he didn't know in the first episode is that his wife, Laura Linney, was cheating on him, and he was discovering that. That comes out in the first episode.
All right.
But the partner, who's kind of a fucked up
person. This is remarkably
person,
close to my own marriage, but I'm not laundering money for anyone.
The partner was ripping off the cartel and kind of like taking some money.
Well, skimming. They were skimming.
Yeah. So this is the first beginning of the first episode. This head of the
Colombian. By the way, as a lesson to everyone listening, if you're working for a cartel,
don't skim.
They keep really good records. So you think you're the CPA, but they're...
So here's the setup of the thing. He kills the partner, leaves Jason Bateman alive, because Jason Bateman's character is really intelligent, sends him down to the Ozarks.
Wait, you're giving away. I'm sorry.
The first episode.
Yeah,
of the
but
first
you're cheating the best part about it. He's gonna kill
it's
Jason Bateman.
Ozark.
No, he's gonna kill Jason Bateman. Bateman talks his way out of it.
So he's sent down to the Ozarks. and he has to launder money in the Ozarks. He has to launder like a couple of million bucks or something to prove to the cartel guy that, you know, to make things right.
Which works better than you think it should, because he buys all these businesses and starts pumping millions of dollars through like a bait and tackle shop in the Ozarks, which should draw the suspicion of some people, but really doesn't. And that's kind of my problem with it. You like this series a lot more than I do.
Well,
and I like it a lot, but I just think it's got some real logical problems.
So at the end of the second season, at the end of the first season, a lot happens. I won't actually even give it away, even though it's been a year ago it aired, but I'm just saying that a major character dies, and Jason Bateman's all screwed up, and they don't know what to do, and it kind of picks up right where it left off, and it really is on the same level. Jason Bateman directed the first two episodes. The third episode he did not direct, but the quality and the level is just, if you like the first season, it's just right up there with the quality.
Well, I will say this.
Second season, just
I will
good
say as- this. If you like Jason Bateman, you'll like it.
I say if you love Breaking Bad, you will like this.
This is not Breaking Bad.
If you love Breaking Bad, you will like this.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
The second season
does not disappoint. It's not like, you know, if you never watched the first season and you binge watch the first season and then start the second season, you won't even notice it. It's just like it's a continuous story.
Here's what I'll say, in my opinion, and then jump in, Bill.
I
will. But I remember a movie called To Live and Die in L.A.
Yeah,
that was Willem Dafoe and William Peterson. And that's a good movie. William Friedkin directed it. That's a cool movie, but what makes it really cool is it's about money laundering also. It's also about counterfeit money. And I didn't know anything about counterfeit money, and this movie, as good as it was even better because it introduced me something I didn't know about. So I will give Ozark this much. I didn't know anything about laundering money, or what I did know about it, I didn't think could be shown to me in a new way. And this series definitely does that.
Yeah.
100%.
Well, I like Ozark. And
to the extent that they move to the fucking hinterlands of the South.
Yeah, Jed Clampenville.
Right. It is. It's funny you say that. It really is kind of the Beverly Hillbillies goes to, with money.
In reverse.
With
Green Acres.
It's Beverly Hillbillies meets Scarface. And so... In that way, it is interesting and cool. And
it's more Green Acres. The rich people go and live in Hooterville.
Hooterville, yeah.
Yeah, it's the opposite.
Yeah.
It's more like that, really. Eddie Albert and Ava Gabor have to deal with Arnold the Talking Pig and Arnold. Mr. Haney, I'm trying to think of some other
people
characters.
Who listen to this podcast a lot know how easily we digress, and yeah. This is another example of that.
Can you name any more characters on Green Acres? Bill Brigoli. Can you name this? What was Eddie Albert's character's name on Green Acres?
Albert or something like that.
No, Oliver. She screamed it all the time.
Oliver,
right?
Okay.
No, but the guy who was also, I think, in, since you've dragged us into this. hole that you only you
this
understand
trivial hole
is Mr. Haney that like
Pat,
showed up
Pat
with
Hingle the, wasn't it
Pat Hingle no Pat
Pat's somebody
shows up with his pickup truck and is always selling them shit that
they didn't think
they needed, but they did, because so that's sort of the same pull through in this. I don't love it as much as you do, Ozark. But I will watch the second season.
There you go. So the Oscars, as I teased at the top of this podcast, if you're still with us, and I hope you are. The Oscars have changed.
Statistics say that 87% of our audience stays till the end of the podcast. And the other 13% are my wife, my daughter, Neil's wife, his daughter.
True. So anyway... there was big news this week. Was it this week or no? It was last week, actually. End of list.
Let's make it seem timely.
Anyways, big news recently that just came out from the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. They have not made a change in the way they do the show in, I think, something like 9 years. And that last change was they went from 5 Best Picture nominees to a possible 10. And the logic behind that
They
were going to incorporate more popular films that don't necessarily
Do you know that it's statistically impossible for them to come up with 10 based on the way they vote? The way they vote with the weighted system, is it impossible for them to have 10?
I learned that today from
Roger Friedman, who explained the whole process about how they vote and how nominate.
Let's talk about the news.
What's the news?
Anyway, so the news is that
they're moving to February 9th.
Yes, there's three pieces of news.
2 weeks earlier.
Right, but not this, not the next.
Yeah, no, this next one. It's February 9th.
I think it's 2020.
They said 2020? this next one is going to remain the end of February.
It's funny because it has been confused out there because a lot of people say, oh, no, Black Panther is going to be nominated in both.
Well, let me get to what happened. The other secondary news is they're going to limit the telecast to 3 hours.
It's all about a podcast to you, isn't it?
And the last piece of news.
Neil's tying
his
shoes.
We're stopping the podcast momentarily while Neil ties his shoe because he's sitting down, but he's worried he may trip in a seated position.
Well, I'll forget and I'll get up and I might trip. Okay, anyway. So the last year's Oscar telecast was the lowest rated televised telecast. I'm sure Jimmy Kimmel's kind of...
Well, they've been going down every year since
Titanic.
So what
they've decided to do is add a new category called Best Popular Film. What does that mean exactly? They said details to follow, and those details haven't come out yet. Now, I was figuring they would just take top 5 grossing films of the year and make those the popular... There's a whole conspiracy theory on this, which could be right, is the fact that if you look at the top 4 of the 5 top earning films of the year... are either Disney or Pixar films, be them the Avengers, which is distributed by Disney and they own Marvel, and Pixar, Incredibles 2, and what are the other ones on there, those big Disney tentpole things?
I don't know. Guardians, they own them all. Don't
Guardians worry. Of the Galaxy or something?
Well, the point is, though, I mean, for the purposes of this argument, is that the
Disney owns ABC.
Pixar has actually been pretty well represented at the Oscars.
What's that?
Yeah.
Pixar has been pretty well represented at the Oscars.
But the point
because there is an animation category, which is also a new addition in the last, 10 years. But continue with your
theory is that ABC owns Disney, and Disney has most of the top... most popular, highest-grossing films.
Yeah, but the bigger thing is that just the studios in general, without making this a conspiracy theory just about Disney, is that the big studios in general have become disappointed in the Oscars because they haven't represented their motion pictures. But what I want to ask for the purposes of this conversation is, in 1927, when they started the Oscars... when the Academy decided to pick movies and make
one... Did you enjoy the award ceremony that year, by the way?
All I'm going to say is, did they sit down as a group and go, gee, I hope someday, when this is on television, we'll pander to the network and picking the movies that people want to watch and making that more ratings friendly? And of course... the answer is no, because that wasn't what the Academy has always been about. What the Academy has always been about is the best movies of the year. What this category is doing is basically becoming
the People's Choice Awards.
People's Choice Awards, or as we've talked about for as long as I've known you, there's way too many award shows.
Yeah.
So what does the Oscars decide to do? Kind of become another one of those awards shows because it's creating
Do you really think one category that's going to boost the ratings? People go, "Gee, I got to see if Mission Impossible."
Let's add the other factor into this equation, which you left out, which is that they've also decided to cut editing, sound design, right, what production design, to get it down to 3 hours.
But 3 hours is not that short of a period
this
of
is,
time.
But Neil, this is all pandering to ABC. This is ridiculous. What they should do is keep the Oscars the quintessential apex zenith of any Academy or anybody's voting and move it to, if it's sucking on ABC, put it on Bravo. Bravo would love to have this show. Put it on. How much would Netflix pay to buy the show and put it and stream it?
ABC has the rights, I think, through 2028 or something like that. So, you know.
Those are Nimrod programmers that just want bigger numbers.
They're still getting
numbers.
One of the biggest audiences of the year in an era when the live television is predominantly
it would get a big audience wherever
sports.
It ran. It would get a big audience wherever you put it.
I don't know, whatever it is. They're still getting a lot of viewers on this thing. It's just not the viewers that they got, you know, 20 years ago. But 20 years ago was pre-internet, pre-200 cable channel choices. You know, I mean, all live. I mean,
is that a reason to downgrade the quality of your
award?
No,
I'm not arguing with you.
Is that a reason to downgrade?
I think it's a stupid category. Rob Lowe had a great tweet. And I'm going to paraphrase him, but he was
how many times have you said that in your life? And this will be the first time.
He was saying this is the death of this, the final nail in the coffin on the film industry, which has become a tentpole, franchise business.
Says the man who's hawking. What kind of diet food is he now? Nutrisystem,
right? Atkins.
Yeah, but you got to give Rob Lowe credit. He does not. He does not do action comic book movies. If you look at his choices,
Rob Lowe was certainly part of one of the most groundbreaking Oscar performances with Snow White. So, yeah, you're right. He's the guy we should be listening to.
A very long time ago, you know? But, I think the Oscars...
Mark Harris had the best tweet of all. He said, and I'm paraphrasing, I see, we're changing the rules so we can tart up a show that no longer appeals to everyone. And he said it much more eloquently than that. But the point is, we should not be letting the network decide what the Oscars
pick as
the best and worst movies.
To your point, the Oscars have become the point that we've talked about forever is, right, there are so many award shows out there that when it used to be the Oscars was the only game in town, like the Tonys for Broadway was the only game in town, and the Grammys was the only game in town for music, and the Emmys were the only game in town for television, you know, it was a big event. It was like, wow, the Oscars, what are they going to give the Oscar to? And now the Oscars is the last show in a long award season that's, you know, the People's Choice Awards and the SAG Awards, and it's just on and on and on, and our organization, the Critics' Choice Awards. And, you know, by the time you get to the Oscars, you've seen, you know, you've seen the cast of La La Land give their speech, you know.
So the better point is...
You've seen Frances McDormand's nine acceptance speeches for Three Billboards Outside Missouri.
Neil, we used to save the best show for last.
Yeah.
If this is not the best show now, then they've shot themselves in the foot. Here's the thing. If the SAGs, and I'm guessing the SAGs will be now the most prestigious.
No, I think the Oscars will still be the Oscars. So Titanic, let's say the stupid rule was in place, and Titanic came out this year, okay? Brand new movie.
That's
it
a great question.
Best picture of the year.
That's a great
does it
question.
Also, does, it has to win best popular film of the year.
Sure.
I mean, does it win best picture
Whoa. Let's ask the real question. Does it get nominated in both categories?
Titanic.
And are they going to let... No, but the better question is, are they going to let some movies be nominated in both categories?
Sure, because
they do now. They let them be nominated
example.
As animated.
Example from last year is Get Out. Now, would Get Out got nominated for Best Picture?
Right.
Get Out. What would happen to a movie like that with this system?
You sent
or
a
foreign movie. There have been many years where
a foreign language,
but there have been many years when it's been nominated in both categories.
Yeah, like Life
so
is
now we have a category.
Yeah, what was that Roberto Benigni movie?
Life is Beautiful.
Yeah, so the question is, the first question is, what qualifies for this new category?
Sent me a list. I thought it was going to be all strictly box office, you know? Just go down the line, look at the most popular. Well, how do you determine a popular movie? what's made the most money. You take the five highest grossing films of the year, and that becomes the popular category. But Bill McCunney sends me a list, and he goes, and it was a whole different, do you remember what was on that list?
Yeah, but before we get to that, I have
Mary
to tell you
Poppins.
That, well, that we haven't seen the Mary Poppins movie, but we're going to assume that's going to be wildly popular. And
Lin-Manuel
and Miranda. Black Panther.
Black
Panther is a great example of if Black Panther gets nominated and most popular,
they didn't have the stupid category.
Exactly. So then, how do you feel as the makers of Black Panther? Fuck me! I got nominated in this popular category.
But you're still winning an Oscar.
But
congeniality is what it is.
You know what? I was having lunch today with
Roger
Friedman from Showbiz 411. He's been a guest on this show, and he said a long time ago when he was a kid, E.T. came out, and E.T. was nominated as a Best Picture nominee, and he said, oh, gee, I hope that wins. And somebody pulled him aside, young Roger Friedman, and said, no, money is how that movie wins. Chariots of Fire or whatever won in that year is the Academy winner.
So tell me why Titanic wins Best Picture. That was the second highest grossing.
Well, I'll give you a better example, much more recent than that. Gladiator. Gladiator in 2000, I think, won Best Picture. That would never get into the regular category. That would be in the other category. So then,
I don't know about that.
So what do you? So if you win,
well, you're thinking that
it's like
this
we live
other,
in this,
other
we
category
live in this,
is exclusionary.
No, but listen to me. We live in this period of in time when every kid who shows up for the spelling bee or shows up for
anything
gets a ribbon, and like that's how this feels to me. It feels to me like so. Let me ask a better question. You know all these because we've ignored it. You know all these other categories that they said they're going to take out and put at the end of the show and
yes.
do during the commercials,
yes.
let's say. I don't even know what they are, but let's assume they're editing,
Jimmy Kimmel
production
goes,
value, blah, blah, blah.
You've had a good
blah,
run,
blah.
Best short animated film.
What if they had just, what if they had tried this for a year, Neil and Bill? What if they had tried doing that, taking all those extraneous categories and not had this new category and announced those at the end of the show and brought it in at 3 hours, and the ratings had gone up without doing this second category. Then if that had accomplished, so you're looking at me quizzically, if the goal is to get the ratings up for the Oscars, and all you had to do was take the bullshit categories out that most
right.
of America
best
doesn't
sound
care about,
editing. Yeah, right,
and
right.
make those separate things
well,
that you
announced.
Well, they
do announced. Some of that. Earl, in an award
yes,
earlier
yes,
this month,
they,
we
they,
did blah,
they
blah,
learned
blah.
That lesson years ago.
Right, so they take all that shit out
so
that
if they
cares
took
about.
All the shit out that most people don't care about and announced that at the end and didn't do this other category and the ratings went up because people didn't have to sit through all those things, would they have invented this category at all?
Well, here was my... I had this solution for the Oscars many, many years
oh,
ago.
Oh, please regale us,
and
Yoda.
Nobody ever did this, but I
why
said...
Why?
You know, they should give out, there are six major categories. I mean, up until now with this popular thing. I mean, there's picture, director, actor, actress, supporting actor, supporting actress.
And the maybe shows, you could say screenplays, maybe.
So okay, even screenplays. Let's say eight categories. Or if you want to throw the animated film in, you could say nine categories. So, okay, over the course of the 3.5 hour show, which is what it used to be, why can't you just do a category, a major category, every 20, 25 minutes. Instead of what they do is they open the show up with best supporting actor or best supporting actress, and then an hour and a half later they'll throw best supporting act, you know, the other one in,
yeah.
and then everything gets ganged up into the last like 15 minutes of the show, all the major categories.
Speeches are shortened. If you watch
know,
that
so
show,
you
get to talk for an hour and a half if you win. Listen to this.
Evenly.
You get to talk for an hour and a half for supporting actor, and actor gets like,
like
hurry it up, 20 seconds,
exactly.
10 seconds, whatever.
Exactly.
I say cut out 3 or 4 musical numbers,
nobody,
all the film montages except Who Died, and shorten the monologue.
Which
and,
they always fuck
and
up
don't
also.
Don't do any nonsense like by the
okay.
Audience pizza.
Well, here's the thing. Our organization.
It's half an hour right
there. But you're missing my point. If they did all that, if they did all what Bill just said,
and
the ratings went up, then they wouldn't need this
would
stupid
ratings,
other category.
Would the ratings go up?
Well, we don't know,
do you think
we?
The ratings would go up, Bill,
we don't
if they
know.
Did that?
Yeah,
we
I
don't
so.
Know.
Well, our group has all these weird categories like
The best BFCA. Child, the BFCA you're talking about.
Best child actor, best action film, best family film. We have all these categories.
Because we go, like anybody else, to the networks and say, please buy our show. And what does the network say? Well, we will, but it's gonna it's gotta get ratings. It's gotta get ratings.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. What's your take on Bill Bregoli?
Already told you my idea to shorten
The category.
The most popular category. It's, I don't know. It's gonna be a failure probably. It's they'll do it 1 or 2 years and they'll say, it didn't work.
Really?
I think the headline. Well, wait a minute. There are a lot of people that say, between now and 2020, they're going to talk the Academy out of this idea. But if the Academy goes forward and does it, I say it tarnishes the Oscars. The Oscar is not worth what it was if they do that.
I agree with you. I think that that even though the Oscars has now become like the last award show, and as Bill McCuddy said, save the best for last, even though it's tiresome. Because you've seen all these movies win other awards at other award shows. The point is, it's still the gold standard. You read somebody's biography, the first thing they say is Academy Award nominated, four-time Academy Award nominated. You know, it is the gold standard.
I won the Academy Award for Best Popular Movie. Like, that's going to be the biggest turd on the planet.
But, you know, but if you think about it, I mean, they give an Oscar out for Best Live Action Short Film, okay? And if you go to the guy's or woman's house who made that Best Action Live Short Film, that same Oscar statuette that, you know, To Kill a Mockingbird won.
Louis C.K. had the best line about that a couple of years ago. Remember, he said, the guy, he had some documentary short, and he goes, the guy who wins this is going home in a Honda Civic. And, like that's what's great about the Oscars, is that new people win, but
so I'm saying
the best popular movie is not going to honor the new people. It's going to honor the huge studios, and so it's pandering.
So what do you think?
Why would you tarnish it?
What do you think is going to qualify for best popular film? Is it
this year?
Is it strictly box office? And
I don't know. They haven't said whether they're going to make it strictly box
And that's
office
a problem. That is
right
a problem.
There. They don't
if
know
they announced a credential, a criteria for which you were the best, most popular, like box office or something.
Is that what's it going to be?
I don't know.
I mean, is it going to be box office? Is it going to be, what is it? Like what?
And then if you're Peggy Siegel or you're any of the people that we know that are hired to like make the Academy like nominate things, are you going to push people to nominate you for the most popular movie or
here's
for
what's going to happen? Mission Impossible. What's the
studio?
No, the subtitle on Mission Impossible.
Fallout.
Okay, now that movie knows in a million years it would never get an Oscar nomination.
Well, if they had a category like stunt work,
for best picture, although
should
in the trailer. You, I guarantee.
And by the way, he's right. He was kidding about that, but like it'll get okay, or but it'll get nominated for some special effects thing.
Yeah,
we would get if they didn't have this category, we would still get a DVD screener of Mission Impossible Fallout. There would be trade ads in all the magazines, trade magazines, saying for your consideration. It'll say on the screener, Best Picture, and they would know in a million years, even though they're sending it out to, you know, because I don't know, because that's what they do.
Well, a lot of that's contractual.
They would never get
it. Well, Neil makes a good point. We're going to get a lot more screeners that year.
So now you're going to say, for your consideration, Best Popular Film, Mission Impossible Fallout. For your consideration, Best Popular Film, Avengers Infinity War.
Do you realize how ridiculous
what
you're saying is?
Do you realize?
No, but do you realize how ridiculous to ask somebody sitting at home in California that's 93 years old and votes for the Oscars what the best popular movie is? They decide what's popular, or we decide what's popular?
The best popular
that's the whole
movie
problem.
Should be the movie that makes the most money is the most popular movie. That's the most popular movie.
Right, but they have
said earlier, but they about already, an hour ago into this podcast.
All right,
like,
but
that's the,
but,
that,
Neil,
but they already have an award show for that, don't they? It's called The People's Choice.
Yeah, or if it's strictly box office, then you'll know who won. By the end of the year, by February, you
right.
know who won.
Right, he's right.
So what
technically,
criteria is
technically, so then...
So is Best
so,
Picture
no, wait,
Artistic
So wait,
award?
What he's saying is... You'll know who won because the five top box office are the ones nominated, and then the Oscars are going to decide, no, the one that made the most money wasn't the one we like the most. The one we think the most popular is the one that made the fifth most money.
Let's face it. The movies that
It's a flawed system.
The movies that have won the Academy Award for Best Picture over the last few years, if you take almost all of the movies in that eight of them that are nominated or nine of them that are nominated and cumulatively add up their box office grosses, you know, they probably don't even touch what Mission Impossible Fallout's made, you know, or, you know, was Avatar nominated for Best Picture?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, it didn't win.
Yeah,
but,
well, Get Out made a ton of money and it was nominated last year.
So, you know, the thing is, these Moonlight, I mean, I think what they're saying is that, you know, Moonlight wins Best Picture, and last year, The Shape of Water wins Best Picture. And, you know, what percentage world population has seen these films as opposed to, you know, one of these popular films?
This is a better question. He just brought up Get Out.
Yeah.
So Get Out was considered a watershed breakthrough movie because it got into the Oscars. If Get Out was in the most popular category, wouldn't everybody go... Oh, they picked that because it's got the race issue in it, and it's got they put it in the popular category, and it wouldn't that be like winning the like shit award? Wouldn't that be like the turd award?
Think the best popular movie award, even though my comparison, if you've been win the best live action short, it's still that same gold Oscar statue.
I think the bottom line is the Oscar doesn't mean the same now that there's two best categories. That's all.
They're cheapening the Oscar. They're making it like these other dopey MTV award shows or what, you know, MTV movie awards or whatever. You know, the Oscar was a class, was as boring as the show could be.
Which
it
the
was
Oscar
still a
was never thing. Meant to compete with. It was never meant to compete with that.
Nobody wanted to.
It was to be the best of the best, and now it's the best of the best right. and this
last
other category.
Last thing on this.
Please.
I have to say that the Oscar has had, the Academy Awards have had many questionable Best Picture winners over the last number of years. I mean, really, No Country for Old Men is the best picture of the year. I mean, look at that year. Is that movie the best picture of the year? I mean, you know, Moonlight is a good movie, and it's a very innovative movie. Is that the best picture of the year? Well, you could make an argument.
Crash.
Maybe you
Come
could
on.
Say.
Crash.
There's
Crash.
A lot of movies that you go yeah. where I go, like, are you kidding? You know, are you kidding? Really? You know, but... I'm in a different business. I'm in the business of predicting winners, not like what I should win. What I think, you know, I do my 10 best list when I, you know, that to me is my way of saying this is what should win. This is what I think is the best.
Okay, so let me ask you as a critic. Are you going to have a 10 best and a 10 most popular list?
No, I will not have a 10 most popular.
No one will. No one will.
I think are the 10
No one will. So why are we doing it at the Oscars?
To raise the ratings of the show. That's
which was never
the
intention. Which was never the intention of the Academy when they invented the Oscar.
Well, Robert Wall, our friend, star of Arliss,
in a hotel and nobody watched
was
it.
Here. He would tell you, as he's told me, that the reason the Oscars were created was because Louis B. Mayer, who used to run MGM, decided, like, let's do an award show and, you know, we'll kind of elevate the standings of these movies and we'll get all these stars to show up because they love awards, you know, and by the way, at that first Academy Awards that you talked about in 1927, it was, I think, a luncheon and
at the Roosevelt Hotel.
At the end, they just handed out the awards.
Half the people didn't show up, right?
They just handed out.
Well, I will bow to Robert Wall, who knew Lou B. Mayer personally, if he's listening now, you know, I applaud that relationship.
It was a promotional vehicle.
He wrote his material.
He wrote a lot of stuff. Right?
It was a gimmick. To
Robert hosted the Oscars once. Do you remember?
No, Robert wrote many Oscar shows when Billy.
But he hosted one year. Do you remember?
No, I don't.
In The Bodyguard.
Oh, okay. Okay. But he wrote many a show when Billy Crystal was hosting. Anyway, we're out of time.
Oh dear.
I wanted to bring up the on Chesil Beach, the thing
you
love.
We will talk about
it. You loved that.
Yes. Yeah. So when we did our summer movie preview, Sir one of the Sharona. Movies I was most looking forward to was On Chesil Beach, which is on DVD and streaming this week. And, you know, I love Saoirse Ronan. Brooklyn was my favorite movie of the year when she was in that.
Big mistake.
You know, with Domhnall Gleeson. Great movie. And,
not great.
You know,
movie.
I don't think this is a bad movie. I think it's okay. I liked it, but I didn't love it.
I was kind of moved by it, and I thought you loved it. So
Mrs. McCuddy and I watched it this week.
And
what did Mrs. McCuddy think of it?
We were both very moved by it. And
I was very moved at the end of the movie. It's about
A woman who's basically frigid on her.
No, it takes place. You have to give the time period, but it's context.
Sure.
It takes place. Is it the early 1960 or 62 or something like that? It's before the sexual revolution, and she's completely grossed out and turned off by the thought of having sex, and she gets married. And her husband...
Robert Wall and Louis B. Mayer had this conversation many times.
Her husband wants to have a wedding night, and she's completely turned off and disgusted by this whole concept of having sex. So she makes him an offer, and it's not an offer he can refuse, actually. Not an offer he can refuse. It's like, let's stay married, and you can fool around with anybody you want, but because I love you, but I'm not doing that, you know?
And that's, let's be honest, that's been the success of Neil Rosen's marriage. But the point is, this movie I thought was going to be terrible, and I was very impressed with it, actually.
Did you see On Chesil?
No, I didn't see it.
Yeah, it's nicely photographed.
New on demand this week. I recommend it. Neil's 50-50.
No, I like it. I like the movie. I mean, Saoirse Ronan's great. She's just... Anything she does, she's just terrific.
I will say in one way to defend it, and I normally hate this, they age everybody at the end of the movie in a way that's like completely believable.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Well,
normally they fuck that up, and this is like, man, Saoirse Ronan looks... They don't cast an older actress. She has makeup
on. I like
on.
The movie, Bill. I like okay. the movie. I don't love it, but I do like the movie.
I liked it more than I thought I would.
And it's good, and the ending is really... Really, really.
We talked about real estate porn, and I want to give a shout out to when we talked about Crazy Rich Asians. I want to give a shout out to $1 Million Listing on Bravo, which is about New York, where Crazy Rich Asians buy a lot of real estate. And it's had a couple of things this week, in the last couple of weeks, with a guy named Steve. And I just. Mrs. McCuddy and I are tube side every week. This is the best season it's ever been. That's all I'll say.
There you go. What's on tap next week, Bill Vigoli?
Well, something called the Happy Time Murders, you may have heard of, with Melissa McCarthy and puppets.
Well, I can't wait for that one.
Yeah. Well, it's
she's making
Brian
a
Henson,
lot of good choices.
Kim Henson's son supplies the puppets, and we'll see. It's already been sued and won because of its advertising campaign.
We're not talking about...
And it's also something called AXL, Axel, I guess. And it's called A Family Adventure. It's from Global Road, and it's going wide, but I know nothing else about it. And that's all that's opening next week.
And
it's the Dog Days of Summer.
And we're not talking about the Mark Wahlberg movie because they're not screening it for us.
Mile 22.
You should talk about that TV show I'm not on again.
The TV show you're not on?
Yes, your CUNY show.
Would you like to be on the show?
Give him $10. You can be on the show.
Talking movies on CUNY.TV.
CUNY.TV.
Put in Arts in the City, and we come up somewhere in the middle of the show, and I will tweet out links to the segment as well as the law.
Our pal Lisa Rossman is on
that. Lisa Rossman.
Big fans. Lots of people listen to this, want to know about Lisa. She's fine. She had a cold last... No, I don't know what happened to her, but she's fine, and she's on the show, and so tune in for that.
You can follow Bill Bregoli... You can't.
Twitter's done. Twitter's over.
I'm at Bill McCuddy on Twitter, and Neil is at
Neil Rosen Apples.
Yeah.
And thanks for sitting around talking movies with us, and we will sit around talking movies again with you next week.